The MCU waits for no one. Try as we might, we here at Scripter Screen just can't keep up. So we're back with another Marvel double feature, this time with Thor: Love and Thunder and Disney Plus's Miss Marvel. So grab a seat, either at home or in the cinema, and settle in for another episode of the MCU's newest offerings. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another wonderful edition of Scripter Screen. I am one of your co-hosts, Christopher Kitchen, alongside my other most wonderful co-host, Zach Strachman.
That's me.
Zach, how are we today?
We're doing pretty good. It's another day, another episode of Scripter Screen, your number one source for expanding your cultural horizons.
Horizons that I think are about time expanded. I feel like a lot of us out there were nice and nestled in our comfort zones, and honestly, wake the fuck up. There's a lot of shit going on, and we all need to be very aware of things happening both historically and in the world currently. There's a heat wave right now.
Tell me about it.
It's insane. Over here charging people with contempt of Congress.
Yeah, it's bad. It's a sorry state in the world today, and we need some escape, something to keep our attention, so that way we don't all end up just doom scrolling.
I'll tell you what, though, I feel like some of the content we're getting, it's in good taste. You know, it's not just an escape, but it's a way, you know, it's a biased way of educating ourselves. But I don't look at this as a bad bias. I think this is a very good. We're getting a lot of great content right now, and
absolutely,
things that I feel like a lot of people can take away from, or they'll take a lot of good things away from this stuff, and from the Marvel universe nonetheless. Now,
it's ever relevant.
Absolutely. Now, Zach, where may people find other much-needed relevant content and discussion?
Well, they could go on their various podcast apps, whether it be Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon, Spotify. I'm sure there are others, iHeartRadio, and our host, the lovely Anchor, and I believe there's some websites. There is
www.scripturescreen.com or anchor.fm/scripturescreen. There they can find all past, present, and future topical conversations about all things film and TV.
And not only that, but they can leave us comments, they can tell us how we're doing, they can tell us what they want to hear us talk about in future episodes, and they should, because we're always looking for more. We're greedy for content. We want and hunger for more. We just don't have time, and that's why we're doing two Marvel things at once. It's really Disney's fault for releasing so much in such a small amount of time.
There's also a lot of things going on in the world right now. You know,
that's true.
We have, you know, there's some updates. I want to say, like, things are happening. Zach, I don't know if you know this. You're invested. We live vicariously through each other for a lot
That's
of different
true.
Things.
Yes.
Right now, there's this incredible deal happening. Oh, excuse me. I just hit my pop filter. With the IATSE in Los Angeles for the commercial contract. For the first time in a long time, the production department, production supervisors, PAs, are now under consideration for union membership in the commercial world. And I got to say, as a commercial worker, I've worked on many union commercials, as PA even, and to see them have that ability, to be able to join and, you know, be able to get benefits and things like that makes me really happy. Like, to see that we're moving in this direction, and as I work constantly in this world, and I think, like, you know, sometimes if we can't always sit down and do a podcast, it's because we're working on the real things, and then we're coming back and bringing our knowledge to here. And you know what? Like, I'm just really happy to live in this day and age. that
in the words of I believe it's Lizzo, it's about damn time.
There you go. It's about it. Thank you, Lizzo.
And also,
why men be great when they gotta be great?
Yes.
I think she also said that.
Probably, maybe, I don't know. I just know that one song because it's like popular.
She also once said "zuzu zuzu zuzu loof" for seemingly no reason in the middle of a verse. It didn't even rhyme. Sorry, I just felt like sharing that.
But yeah, it's great to see the people behind the scenes really getting their what they deserve. It's funny because I just saw I was just at the movies. Just saw Jordan Peele's Nope, which again is a movie that really focused a lot on the people behind the camera, which I thought was a refreshing thing that you don't see too often in it. And actually, this is exciting, attached to Nope, played right before it, the first teaser of Christopher Nolan's Oppenheimer.
Will it be the colossal flop that Tenet was, or will it
reestablish
the Nolan name?
I really hope this is going to be a reestablishment. If you go back to our very first episode of Script or Screen, oy vey, with my terrible microphone and everything.
That was like 59 episodes ago.
Crazy, right?
Dude.
The one thing I've said I really wanted from Nolan, and this might have actually come up in our Tenet review episode, which is like our third episode, but I really wanted him to get away from the spectacle and go back to more like character-focused stuff, you know, and that's what I think where he really gets it. And yeah. I think that's what we're going to get here. But we are not here to talk about Christopher Nolan again.
Or Jordan Peele.
Yeah,
we will talk about Jordan Peele in the future, though. No, yes. Look out for a Nope episode coming soon. So we will be covering that.
Yeah, it's. I will say though, very good movie. I really want to go see it again while it's in theaters.
Yeah,
and it deserves to be watched. I have yet to see
it, but I will be watching it within the week.
This is the kind of movie it deserves to be seen on a big screen. It's got that spectacle. Let's move on. We're talking Marvel. We're talking Marvel at the movies. Marvel at home. We got Thor: Love and Thunder, and we got Ms. Marvel. Both, I think, are pretty fun experiences overall. And we'll get into them individually. I think we'll probably talk about Thor: Love and Thunder first because it came out before Ms. Marvel, and
I think Ms. Marvel came out before Thor: Love and Thunder, and Thor: Love and Thunder came out before the last episode or two. Or am I wrong? July 8th.
They started on the same day. They started on this.
Okay.
No, excuse me.
No, Ms. Marvel started June 8th. A month. Okay. I was going to say, I thought Ms. Marvel started beforehand.
Okay, so.
But we did sleep on Ms. Marvel for a little bit. We were not early adopters of the series.
I watched the first episode, and it's not through any lack of interest, because I did like the first episode. I just had other stuff I was watching and catching up on, but then I watched all of Ms. Marvel because I really enjoyed it, and... Okay.
I will say that I didn't watch Ms. Marvel early because there was a lack of interest. I was not interested in watching
it. Wow, you're racist.
No.
You heard it here first.
I'll tell you what, my pre-spoilery thoughts is I ate my fucking words. I enjoyed the shit out of that series.
Yes.
So...
So how about this? I don't know about you, if we're jumping too far ahead, but I think I want to talk more about Ms. Marvel than about Thor: Love and Thunder, and I think there's more meat to talk about. So let's talk about Thor: Love and Thunder first.
Yeah.
Get it out of the way. Not to say it's like I want to get it over and done with, but we'll give our non-spoilery thoughts on Thor: Love and Thunder, talk spoilers, and then we'll move on to Ms. Marvel. And for anyone who wants to know our non-spoilery thoughts on Ms. Marvel without having to listen to all of our stuff on Thor: Love and Thunder, Billy, if you could provide them with the timestamp for when we do our non-spoilery stuff for Ms. Marvel right in this space.
Skip to about 44 minutes.
Thanks, Billy. And now, here's some words of affirmation from Billy in this space.
I hope you are all doing well. But if you're not, just remember that how you feel right now does not define you, nor will it define the rest of your life. Whatever is happening to you, or whatever may be in your head and clouding your thoughts, it will not last forever. And if you need help, never be ashamed to ask. We all need it once in a while, because we are all human and none of us are truly alone. You are deserving of compassion and love, there will always be a tomorrow, and you will be here to see it.
Wow, Billy, we all feel really positive now going into the rest of this episode.
I'm wiping a tear from my eye.
I know. What a great person. Actually, I really enjoy Billy. Billy is amazing. And
one in a million.
You know, he's excellent. This is the Billy Thor Power Hour.
Nice.
All right, so Thor Love and Thunder. Here is a little synopsis. Thanks, Rotten Tomatoes, as always. Let's see. Here we go. Thor Love and Thunder finds Thor on a journey unlike anything he's ever faced. A quest for inner peace.
Ooh.
But his retirement is interrupted by a galactic killer known as Gore, the God Butcher, played by Christian Bale, who seeks the extinction of the gods. To combat the threat, Thor enlists the help of King Valkyrie, Korg, and ex-girlfriend Jane Foster, who, to Thor's surprise, inexplicably wields the magic hammer Mjolnir, or otherwise known as Jonathan, as the mighty Thor. Together, they embark upon a harrowing cosmic adventure to uncover the mystery of the God Butcher's vengeance and stop him before it's too late.
That's pretty good.
I would say that is a solid. That if you watched the trailer and read that, it's exactly.
Yeah. No, I'm totally cool with that. Nail on the head. Let me give some general information about this movie, and we'll talk non-spoiler, just our overall thoughts. So directed by the one, the only Taika Waititi, one of the best directors working today, in my humble opinion. Written by Taika Waititi and Jennifer Caitlin Robinson. Produced by Kevin Feige and Brad Winterbaum. Cinematography by Barry Idoine. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. Music by the one, the only Michael Giacchino. Released on July 8th, 2022. 119 minutes long, a budget of $185 million reportedly.
Oh, I see here it's $250 million for Thor.
I believe it. I never found out what the box office was.
This is two competing numbers. So one of them comes from Thor Love and Thunder confronts from IndieWire, and the other one comes from Variety. They're both showing different numbers.
Okay.
So, interesting.
And it says here that Thor Love and Thunder worldwide made a box office total of $520 million.
Interestingly enough, it was reported on several sites that Thor's box office return was not a lot in comparison to a lot of past Marvel, theatrical releases.
Yeah, I think it was on the lower end of things.
In regards of releases in 2022 of all films in North America, at least I know it's done rather well. I think it sits right behind Doctor Strange, mm-hmm. and I mean I think Top Gun Maverick is probably the biggest one release of the year. But I would say though it's. It's the seventh highest grossing film of 2022. That's what it is. Yeah, interesting. Yeah, Top Gun Maverick, number one. Multiverse of Madness, number two. Jurassic World Dominion, number three, interestingly enough. Batman comes in at four.
Nice.
And then right before Love and Thunder sits Minions Rise of Gru.
Gotta love our Minions.
The Gentleman's movie.
So then we have our cast. We have Chris Hemsworth as Thor Odinson, Christian Bale as Gore the God Butcher, Tessa Thompson as King Valkyrie, Natalie Portman as Jane Foster / the Mighty Thor, Taika Waititi himself as Korg, Jamie Alexander as Lady Sif, Russell Crowe as Zeus, and then Chris Pratt, Pom Clemente, Dave Bautista, Karen Gillan, Vin Diesel, Bradley Cooper, and Sean Gunn as the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah. Love to see them.
And there's, you know, a few cameos here and there. But let's talk overall, just non-spoilery, how did we feel about this film? Chris, take it away.
So, you know, what I say to begin with was I excited about Thor, Love, and Thunder. I think we all were. I think the excitement after, like, Ragnarok and just seeing what Taika Waititi kind of did to revive the Thor franchise from its dark beginnings was a well-needed upgrade. And I think he definitely took a page out of, like, James Gunn's book with Guardians. And so it was only fair to kind of pay homage and really kind of orient their stories together at the beginning of this film. Because we all know kind of where Thor's story ends up at the end of Endgame. He goes off with them. And so, you know, it's glad that we kind of get some closure in that chapter to see, oh, okay, what's happened since the events of Endgame. And there's a lot of the familiar comedy and everything. Now, here's the quirl. Here's the thing is that would I say this film was as funny as Ragnarok? I would think there was the attempt to be. I don't know that I personally felt that it was as funny or even as good. Now, I think there are other aspects that were just done excellent. I think Gore and Christian Bale as like the villain and what he kind of did for villains of the MCU was incredible work. And, you know, you talked earlier about Taika Waititi as a director. I think this is where he kind of got to, you know, show his chops, because a director's job, in all reality, outside of, like, you know, helming the project as a whole, it is to direct the actors and, like, pull the best performances out of these actors. And now he has benefited also being a writer. I think he's a far more talented writer than he is a director, personally. That being said, I think his work directing Christian Bale in this, and Christian Bale is just a quality actor in general, he was the best part about this film. Like, mm-hmm. Gore was awesome. I think his story and the way he was adapted, like, his character's, like, quest and beginnings was just super, I don't want to say, like, relatable, but it was just like you really felt the sense of like his pain and
you're not wrong, and I definitely want to touch on that later. But
like,
but yeah.
I definitely felt like he had a very clear quest that audience could look at and kind of relate to, in a sense that like you could sympathize with this character, and like that's the mark of a good villain there. Like that's why Thanos was so effective, is that everybody's like, oh, Thanos had a point. Like Gore had a fucking point, though.
I'm gonna soapbox here for a minute, because I wanna talk about something because you just briefly mentioned, and something that's been bothering me about film discourse lately, that I think needs to change, mm-hmm. and for the 15 people who watched this episode, it's something that it's bothered me, and this is a total. I'm digressing here, but you just mentioned Thanos and his plan and how people said his plan is relatable. But a thing with film discourse I'm seeing now is people saying Thanos's plan did not actually make sense. Therefore, the movie is bad because he was not doing the most optimal plan, and his plan had logistical failings. And I've seen this criticism leveled at someone like Gore, too. And we'll talk about Gore's whole motivation
as we get into spoilers. Yeah, I haven't really heard this or read this myself, so I'm interested.
But, you know, people saying that, like, you know, people say, well, you know, with, like, let's talk about Thanos, because that's old news. But, like, you know, oh, why didn't he just create more resources? You know, destroying half of life isn't actually a good plan. The movie is bad because the plan of this central villain is actually not really well thought out. And this idea that everything in a movie has to be the most optimal version of whatever it can be, a villain's plan, no matter how flawed it is bad because you can argue against it. And it's like I want to be telling people, it doesn't matter if his plan doesn't make sense to you. All that matters is it makes sense to the character.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, I was hearing a bit of this discourse with Gore, and we'll talk more about that, but it's like, you know, people need to understand that characters are written not to be the most absolute, fully encompassing version of themselves, but rather they are characters, and characters believe things, and characters are motivated by certain things to do certain things that may not seem the most...
Yeah, I have the greatest example of this, because I just watched this last night, so I don't know I think I mentioned it on the last episode, that I've been on this binge of rewatching like Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, because the season 6 is airing right now, and so I want to make sure I'm all caught up. I am all caught up on season 5, I've started season 6.
Nice.
But Breaking Bad, I think I was somewhere between like season 4 and 5, but then I just started watching some clips, and the one clip that I'm reminded of is the final scene with Mike and Walter White.
Right.
And so Walter, before he gives Mike the money, is asking for the names of Mike's 9 people that know about everything.
Spoilers for Breaking Bad, by the way.
Sorry, guys. I'm spoiling it. And so because Mike doesn't give him the names and he insults Walter on their last thing, Walter kills Mike. Boom. And when he sits with Mike on the creek, and realizes that he didn't have to kill Mike. He could have gotten the names from Lydia. And and it's like, dude, are you, like... And it obviously, like, it's an interesting piece of writing, because it's almost... it almost breaks a dimension of, like, thought. Because now his monologue's becoming, you know, it's allowed. Now we're hearing his thoughts, and he's expressing it to the guy he just killed because he thought he had to kill him for this reason.
Right.
And it kind of reminds me of that point, like, no, like, this actually makes it more interesting.
Yes,
because
yeah.
You see him facing his failure head on with, like, another obvious piece of logic.
What people who make these criticisms of, your character did not have, the plan that you wrote for this character was not so completely without fault and without issue, that it's a flawless plan and stuff. The reason it's like, you can say so much more about a character by having their plan not make 100% sense.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that someone like Walter White doesn't realize right off the bat that Lydia has the names, and that he reacts with anger at Mike for insulting him, and acts on impulse. It says a lot about Walter that he doesn't have the most optimal plan. And the same goes for Thanos, and the same goes for Gore the God Butcher, where film discourse needs to change, where movies and characters don't have to be perfect.
Yeah. But also, like, I think when you look at, like, the logic of these characters, and that's what they say, like, there's obvious points where logic disagrees, which is why you have protagonists and antagonists, and they express that, and I just think, like, it's kind
as
of obvious.
I think about it as a writer, where I'm writing a character, and I'm like, well, this is the character's motivation, and this is why they're doing it. And I go, well, what if the reader says, well, why would they be doing that and not this? And I go, well, it doesn't matter, because
you need to have a certain level of empathy as a writer, I feel.
Yeah, but it's like, you know, at a certain point, you have to step back and say, I am not writing the perspective of the reader. I'm writing, or the viewer, I am writing a character. And this character would do this.
Yeah.
It says a lot more about Thanos or about Gore that they go about their particular things in the way they do, rather than the most optimal, well-thought-out way that someone 2 weeks after seeing the movie figured out, you know.
And I would also say that, like, you know, some of these experiences that have kind of left these people, like, really, like, this, they both experienced their own type of trauma. Thanos' homeworld was ravaged, and he became obsessed with this idea because of what happened on his homeworld and what they thought, these people thought of him. Gore, his entire life crumbled in front of him, so he was traumatized by these things, and so, like, again, those influence, like, those events influence right. these characters to the point where it's just like, it. You're 100% right, it's only has to make sense to them, and it does because of these reasons, and I would say it's almost very hard to convince them otherwise, which right. is why well, you yeah. have the turmoil.
My whole issue is just that people don't, like, people are expecting that every aspect of a movie has to be flawless now, from yeah. the writing, to the directing, to everything, and sometimes the fact that, you know, not writing doesn't have to be so specifically to a T perfect without flaw, because the flaws allow characters to be nuanced.
No, as long as, like, kind of goal, like, clear goals are established, it should be like easy sailing.
No rule is 100%. But anyway, soapbox over. This is just something that bothered me.
I do have another thought, though, about this. It's my last thought, really, about Thor: Love and Thunder. I felt like the, you know, the plot of Gore and his expectation, his intentions to kill these gods, made for a very interesting quest.
Mm-hmm.
However,
yes.
I found that in this film, and maybe even in the last film, Thor himself and his quest for inner peace, quote-unquote, was far less interesting, and I think it kind of holds roots in just the character itself. Has really... He's been through so much, it's I feel like it's super hard to kind of relate every other piece he's been to together, to the point where, like, I'm not necessarily following this film for Thor anymore, because it's just, I don't know that... It's not that I don't know that I care where he ends up now, but it's just like, dude... I don't know that as a protagonist you are a strong protagonist anymore.
We'll dig into Thor himself in a second.
In the end, this movie I thought was good. I don't know that it was amazing. I think there were a lot of things I liked about it, but I find it to be a very weak entry, like on par with like the first two Thor films. I find that Thor in the Avengers films is more compelling, and same within Ragnarok. Because
he's not the focus.
Exactly. Like, in Ragnarok, maybe he was, but, like, it was different still.
So, okay. As, you know, I agree with a lot of what you said. My opinions are mainly the same. I thought the acting was good. I think... Thor, yeah, it's a weird thing with the character. I honestly, my biggest takeaway from this whole movie was that there was a few times when I was watching it where I was going, you know, the past two or three scenes that have happened, I haven't not enjoyed them, but I haven't had anything that really made me, like, sit back and be like, wow, or, hey, that was a great scene.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of scenes just kind of felt like they were just passing by. And I don't know, maybe it was just the type of story it was, or the way that certain conversations in the movie went, but I just never, like, I felt like with Ragnarok, I was like, oh man, like, every scene is so creative and so fun, and there was such, every scene had such a great dynamic.
It was just so new, too, from what we'd already been given, that, like, it felt super refreshing. You know,
I agree.
Versus, I feel like not every Marvel film, but they've been trying to kind of recreate the same kind of magic for a while now that they hit with, like, Guardians 1, and when they try to do some of these more, I don't want to say colorful pieces, but, like, just in terms of, like, the way that the comedy's done and the way that some of the colors are, that I just don't feel like I don't know that they are hitting that mark. You know, I just feel like it's
Yeah, I agree. I think this is definitely the
Flanderized version.
Yeah, in a sense. And I want to say I liked Thor: Love and Thunder. I didn't think it was great. I would maybe honestly give this movie like a 6.5 out of 10.
This film, what sucks is I feel like I came out of the last two films, like, even like Multiverse of Madness, I came out of it feeling not underwhelmed, but just like whelmed.
Just like not over, not under.
Like, this one is just like, you know, like there was just like a lot of things happening. Not like a lot. Like, this film did not have a lot happening. Multiverse Madness had a lot happening. And, like, there were a lot of cool things, but in the end, I'm like, huh. Like, what do I?
Yeah, it's this was not a movie. This was not a movie where I was like, I need to rush back to the theater to see this again. I was just like, okay, I saw it, and I think a lot of it. And I think I guess now's a good time. We're gonna get into spoilers. If you haven't seen Thor: Love and Thunder, go see it and come back. 3, 2, 1. We're in spoiler talk. I think what really made a difference for me about this movie is that the status quo did not change much. Thor started and ended the movie in more or less the same place. Yes, he kind of found a purpose in protecting the children of Asgard and being their hero and stuff and all that. But, you know, it's not so much a dynamic shift as opposed to, like, say, Ragnarok, where he went from, you know, trying to chase down answers and, you know.
I feel like Ragnarok was kind of great because, like, literally his whole world came crashing down. And so it's
literally,
just like,
yes.
And so it's, and it was also representative of what that film did, like kind of reigniting his story and his franchise. As we kind of gear into, like, okay, now Thor is going to go join back into the fray of, like, what's happening on Earth and with the Avengers and everything. But as, like, I almost feel like his story ended at the end of Endgame, you know?
Almost, yeah,
and,
yeah.
And so, like, this extra telling, I don't know that I would say is like, a fantastic way to kind of, like, start off his continuation of, like, oh, he's still present relevant. The one thing I did like, and I maybe like this for a separate reason, is the return of Jane Foster and Natalie Portman. Yeah. Because, well, one, I don't know if you remember this, but the woman Thor, like Jane Foster, Mighty Thor storyline only came out like in the last 10-ish years.
2013?
Like 5 years. Either way, like, you know, I guess a lot of the MCU storylines they've taken have been released, like, while, you know, since the inception of Iron Man, like, from comics of the 2000s, as well as, like, some original content, or, like, some, you know, like, original to Marvel content, like, from the Golden Age. So it's nice to see that, like, okay, when we read these headlines, like, oh, a woman Thor, like, oh, so unheard of, the feminists are celebrating, and then the, you know, the people in their mom's basements are up in arms, like, oh, Thor can't be a woman. But, like, they're including these storylines, and we're seeing them in the films, and, like, that's pretty cool, like, from adaptation perspective. And I think they gave her character, like, some better closure than just kind of writing her out and, like, kind of ignoring her character's presence. And I did like that aspect, too, and her journey, I felt, was more compelling than where we last saw Thor, just because, like, I feel like Thor's done.
Yeah,
Jane Foster, we got what we kind of needed from that, and we got it in an interesting way.
You're not wrong, and it's funny because the biggest thing I saw coming out of Thor: Love and Thunder, a lot of people were saying this, and I don't really agree with it. Is they're like, it's time for Thor to get back to being a serious character, and I'm like, the only way you're going to make Thor a more serious character is by introducing some form of loss into his life. And what more could Thor lose at this point? He's already lost literally everyone.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do with Thor now. I think maybe it's, you know, they gotta tool around with it. It was an inspired move to switch him to a more, like, Flash Gordon adventure type character.
Yeah.
And it worked wonders for a while, but now we maybe need a new twist on it. We'll see, because clearly Thor 5 is happening. They've basically confirmed it.
Yeah. Well, at the end, I guess we could say, like, they did say Thor would return.
Yes.
And they introduced a couple of other characters. Now, I will say this kind of left a bad taste in my mouth, though, about something. Was that, you know, for years, I would always look at, I would always tip my hat to James Gunn and say, I'm so excited for, like, Guardians and stuff. But I feel like even seeing the Guardians at the beginning of this film, I'm not sure that I feel the same anymore, you know, about them. Like, I just feel like some of the pieces of the bad taste that this film left in my mouth made me a little less excited to see the return of the Guardians than I was before. And especially, I guess that has a little something to do with also the amount of time it's been and, like, kind of the way they had to juggle the stories of, like, you know, what Guardians 3 and the Christmas special were supposed to be before, you know, the public conflicts that Disney and that those parties kind of went through.
Mm-hmm.
To now that I don't know that I care as much. I'm more interested in some of the other things they're doing. Like, in terms of the Thor franchise, the only character from that area that I'm most interested in and still compelled by is Loki and his series.
Yeah, in a way. I will say I have faith in James Gunn, and certain things from the cast have said that, like, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 is going to be a masterpiece and stuff.
I just feel like, in terms of, like, the cosmic side of the MCU right now,
mm-hmm.
Thor was like our starting piece.
Yeah.
Guardians was like the secondary piece, and that was great. But then we had Captain Marvel, and now mm-hmm. the future we're getting the Marvels, and with the return of Photon and the sword kind of base that's hidden with all the fucking, what are these guys called? The green
Skrulls.
Guys? The Skrulls. Like, that is an interesting link. We have the Eternals link. And I'm like, right now, I'm sitting at a point where I think I even liked Eternals more than I liked Thor, Love, and Thunder.
In a way, yes. Yeah, I think it's funny because I recently...
I was arguing about this with somebody this week, and they're like, Thor, Love, and Thunder was amazing. I'm like, but...
It wasn't amazing. It was just good.
If it was amazing, then I judge your taste in cinema. And two, I'm like, let's really analyze this, buddy.
Yeah. Now, I'll say this, moving on to, like, the one other cast member I want to talk about, and you briefly mentioned him, is Christian Bale as Gore the God Butcher. I leaned over to you, because we saw this movie at the same time.
We watched it together.
And I had this dreaded realization the second... So, it's the movie starts with the cold open, and we get Gore's kind of, his introduction and his origin...
Amazing introduction.
But I leaned over to you, and like literally from like the first couple of lines.
He didn't even have to speak for you to say it.
I just said, oh my God, he's too good of an actor for this movie.
Yeah.
Like, everyone is on cartoon nonsense mode in this movie, and Christian Bale is here literally from his first appearance. As soon as his daughter, Love, mm-hmm. dies
yeah.
in his arms, basically. And right from there, and seeing the look on Christian Bale's face, I said, you know what? The gods deserve it. The gods deserve it.
I'm not going to lie. I watched Christian Bale in this, and he made me think, I'm like, oh, dude, maybe I'm an atheist. Maybe I believe... maybe I... Like, Gore's convinced me. Honestly.
He's that good.
I think so. Like, it... And only... You know what I love about Christian Bale? It's his smile. I don't know what it is about his teeth, but, like, the way he smiles, the way he opens his mouth, like, and, you know, I don't know what numbers the teeth are, but it's right here. Like, there's something about it that is just, like, I love it. And the makeup was amazing, and all the scenes that he was in, and just, you know, when we got, like, the first fight between him and Thor, and it was in just this desaturated space... Like,
the Shadow Realm, it's time to
basically, dude, it was I want to say, like, that was like the epitome of this film. And, you know, I at the same time, I'm trying to remember the lead up to Thor Love and Thunder. I don't know that I was ever thrilled. Like, I was like, I don't know that a Marvel project, you know, Moon Knight, probably the last one I was like super excited about,
mm-hmm.
but like, as of recently, I haven't been as hyped. Maybe Spider-Man. Spider-Man, I was hyped.
Right.
But, like, I'm thinking about the future. The next one that I think is probably, like, I'm so excited for is maybe Ant-Man, just because we get Kang. And
that's interesting. The one I gotta say, the one I'm looking forward to is more so to see what it is. And apparently, this is something I saw, that a rumor that I saw online, that we might be getting a trailer for today. Today being July 23rd when we're recording.
Wakanda
Forever.
Yeah.
Might be getting a trailer just because, obviously...
I have zero expectation of, like, I have no idea what is happening.
But it's Ryan Coogler.
Yeah.
He's a fantastic director. He knows what he's doing. And there's the rumor is that they're going to be introducing Namor the Submariner in this. So... That's probably what I'm looking forward to, but more from a, like, what are they going to do with it? mode than any great desire to see the movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Thor: Love and Thunder was fun. It was. I don't think
it reinvented anything. I don't know that it added what it needed to add, and I think they're right now, they are having a tough sell, especially with where they left us. Like, I don't know that they have me looking forward to the future. So, with that being said, like, the only other benefit that maybe the story would have done is that it gave us insight on how all these other gods from all these other beliefs and worlds kind of tie in together. They all kind of coexist. And, you know, they name drop some things like Ra. So we have, like, a slight nod toward, like, you know, recently, like I just said, Moon Knight.
The fact that we got that the cool pantheon of gods and we didn't see Khonshu there pisses me off.
You know what's interesting is this... I kept coming back to the joke of when Patton Oswalt was on Parks and Recreation, and he's talking about, like, his plan for Star Wars now that Disney bought it. And then he's just like, and this is how we bring the Clash of the Titans universe into the Marvel universe. And this, it basically leads up to, like, you know, Zeus and Russell Crowe's character, and then the introduction to of Hercules into the MCU.
Right.
And I don't know that I give a fuck about Hercules in the MCU.
Apparently, the guy they have playing Hercules is he's in that show Ted Lasso, which I haven't watched. I've never watched it.
It's highly rated. It's probably one of Apple TV's biggest programmings right now.
I know Jason Sudeikis has won many an award from it.
I feel like it's kind of getting the same reaction that Barry did after Barry's first season. Listen, on HBO.
I don't know what
people were expecting, but like it turned out to be an instant hit.
Yeah.
And Ted Lasso, the same thing. But again, Hercules in Marvel, like, I, you know, I'm not that I'm incredibly familiar with the gravity that he has, like, in the world. I know he existed in it, but I just don't know that I care as much about seeing some of these other god characters in the world.
We'll have to see what they do with it. I would say if we have Taika Waititi directing Thor 5, the one thing I think I'd like to see, maybe a little, dial it back on the humor just a little bit. I feel like this movie, he was trying to cram in a joke anywhere he could, and not necessarily just in the places where he should. Tooth Grinder and Tooth Gnasher are very nice goats, but the screaming goat humor, it's funny, but it's like, it didn't need to be so prevalent. I thought Korg was good, but Korg, I think he's the whole joke of just the Kiwi, what do you call a guy who stands in front of a club and doesn't let people in? Kiwi bouncer, which I think is what Taika Waititi said he basically based the personality of Korg on. It's funny, but it's like after a while I'm like, okay, I get it. Like, yes, it's a silly character. I would like to see him kind of reinvent the character a little bit more into something and take him to places we haven't seen. That's what worked with Ragnarok, and I think it could work again.
I just want them to move on.
Okay, fair enough. Speaking of moving on, let's move on to, I think what I can agree, I think you'll agree, is was a much more entertaining Marvel offering, and that is Disney Plus's Ms. Marvel. Would you like to hit us with another synopsis?
Ms. Marvel, this synopsis is brought to you by Christopher Kitchen, because Ms. Marvel, as a synopsis, is a show that Chris didn't think was going to be that great, because he thought it was marketed towards children, and he became less interested in it. And then he watched it and realized, oh my god, the show actually has everything that he loves about programming, even outside the Marvel Universe, and they put it in the Marvel Universe and became that much more interesting, and was actually a great addition into line of programming. Granted, I did not say anything about what the show is about. I just
Kamala
said, like,
Khan, a 16-year-old fangirl of the Avengers, particularly Carol Danvers / Captain Marvel, struggles to fit in until she gains her own powers. That's not really true.
I have what Kamala is a superhero fan with an imagination, particularly when it comes to Captain Marvel. Kamala feels it doesn't like she doesn't fit in at school and sometimes even at home. That is until she gets superpowers like the heroes she's look up to.
Sweet. Miss Marvel was created by Bisha K. Ali, directed by Adil L. Arbi, Bilal Falah, collectively known as Adil and Bilal, Mira Menon, Charmaine Obaid Chinoy. I'm sorry if I mess up anyone's names. I am white. Written by Bisha K. Ali, Kate Gritman, Freddie Cyborn, A.C. Bradley, Matthew Chauncey, Sabir Pirzada, Fatima Asghar, and Will Dunn. Cinematography by Robrecht Havart, Carmen Cabana, and Jules Lachlan, O'Loughlin. Music by Laura Cartman. Edited by Nona Kodai, Sabrina Pilsko, Emma McCleave, and Sushila Love. Was on Disney Plus, ran from June 8th to July 13th, 2022. And the cast is as follows. Iman Vellani as the one, the only, Kamala Khan, a.k.a. Miss Marvel. Matt Lentz as Bruno Corelli. Yasmina Fletcher as Nakia Bahadir. Zenobia Shroff as Muniba Khan. Mohan Kapoor as Yusuf Khan. Sagar Shaikh as Amir Khan, Rish Shah as Kamran, Aryan Moayed as P. Cleary. Isn't he in... He's in Succession, right?
Yeah, I know he is.
He was in...
He's Stewie.
Yes, and he was in... what do you call it? No Way Home.
Yeah, he was. Well, he's reprising his role.
Exactly. Nimra Buka as Najma, Muish Hayat as Aisha, Aramis Knight as Kareem / Red Dagger, and then spoilers as spoilers. So we'll get into that last one at the end. But Chris, you kind of gave us how you feel about Miss Marvel. I think you liked it.
I think Miss Marvel introduces a lot of much needed refresh to the Marvel formula. And it comes as a surprise because it's one of the first Marvel MCU installments that is primarily the story of adolescence, you know?
Right.
And so that, not that it comes as a halt to many people, but I think Hawkeye focused a little bit with it with Kate Bishop. That was kind of more like in the sense of like how young adults treat trauma and like the world around them and also like kind of find themselves in adulthood versus this mm-hmm. one's more of like how I think Iman Vellani as Kamala Khan kind of represents exactly what the last 15 years of Marvel movies have done for all of us is that we watched all these amazing grown-ups do all these incredible things.
Right.
And now it's kind of like, you know, I'm like a 26-year-old man, you know, like, but like, when Iron Man came out, 2008, I forget what year it came out. I was only, I don't know, like a little, I was not even 15 yet. So kind of seeing Kamala's obsession with these characters and also just kind of going through her life not only as like a high school student but like into nerd culture, and also she's dealing with like certain like cultural aspects as well as like the daughter of like Pakistani like immigrants, you know, in New Jersey. Yeah. Like these and so these all play a very important role.
In a lot of ways, she's an audience surrogate. You know, we can put a lot of ourselves in to like seeing her ourselves in her character a lot of ways. But she also represents a very particular part of the audience that doesn't see a lot of representation.
Especially in, like, in American media. And that's the thing. You know, I'll say that for, like, Indian Asian culture, like, Pakistani, India, and is it Bangladesh? Those, they have a lot of, I mean, they represent, I want to say, what, a third of our population of the world, mm-hmm. right, of the globe. But, I mean, let's face it, Zach, America's fucking racist, you know?
Unfortunately.
So, a lot of, I mean, though they represent more of the you know, the footprint of the world than we in our narcissistic heads, you know, think they do, mm-hmm. we don't put them anywhere on screen. Like, in all reality, like, yeah, they, there's areas, but, like, unless you put yourself in the area where you're going to watch, like, Bollywood films or things of the sort, you're not going to experience the culture. But, like, I feel like this was kind of such a great way to kind of expose audiences to this culture. And I didn't realize that's what they were doing, because my thing about, like, teenage drama and stuff is, like, I hate it. I don't want to relive those years. I don't want to see and try to relate to it. Like, anytime I see Euphoria on TV, and I know everybody says Euphoria is a great show, and I could see that, I could really see the great storytelling elements that they do and the visual elements that are fantastic, but there's just something about the dialogue in Euphoria that I find
it's
the cringiest thing in the world.
It's because teenagers don't talk like that.
It's melodramatic and it's annoying, but, like, I understand why people like it. I just think it's definitely for a different generation than what I'm comfortable with saying. Now, if I look at Kamala Khan in this show, it's something that I can relate to on like a far greater scale. And not to mention the fact that we start kind of going to, like, this anthropological theme and we start exploring culture. I'm into shit like that, so it brought me in, and I had no idea that it was going to take that turn. And by God, am I happy it did, because it just made that much more... I think it gave it, like, an extra quality that a lot of these other pieces in the MCU are missing. I think we got a hint of that when it came to Moon Knight. And we got a little more of that when, you know, we got Shang-Chi and Legend of Ten Rings. Mm-hmm. And there's a diversity element that I think it's really needed, and I'm enjoying it a lot. And that's why, you know, when I say meeting my words, it's because, like, I judged a book by its cover because I thought it was going to be some kid shit. And no, it turned out to be a fucking history lesson. And, like, I'm back in college taking classes that I enjoy.
So let's just take this opportunity. We're going to dive into full spoilers. For my non-spoiler, I liked it. I liked it a lot. I thought it was fun. And I thought, like you said, a lot of the cultural stuff is very, very interesting and fascinating to look into. But we're going to dive right in. Spoilers, 3, 2, 1. Here we go. So, yes, Kamala Khan, she is a great audience surrogate. We can really see ourselves in a lot of what she does. And then she presents, for people like us, seeing her and her family life and stuff. It's interesting that we get a lot of these cultural things. Like, I did not know about a lot of the stuff they talk about of, like, Pakistan's history.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, learning about just their customs, and the whole episode with the wedding is really fun to watch, because you get to see how different cultures handle certain things, and how, you know, there's a big talk, there's a lot of attention paid to how the mosques are run, and the differences with gender problems in mosques and stuff like that, which is not saying it's specific to mosques. You know, a lot of Orthodox... Yeah,
but it's something that they some people experience, and some people take to, like, not as a there could be improvements and that's one of the things that they experience in the show, that they're like, you know, Kamala's friend, she wants to go and be a part of, like, the board so that she can make more progressive changes. And it's like, hey, that's pretty, like, this is, I love the positions that they take on this show, because I know, listen, you and I have friends that judge every one of the MCU's woke or whatever the fuck nonsense they want to claim.
Like,
oh, they put an all-women scene in Infinity War and Endgame.
Never mind and, that literally every... Marvel movie until Black Panther was about a white man.
And the thing is that, you know, when they say, like, oh, it just kind of came out of nowhere, I'm like, you know, maybe, yeah, I could see that, like, yeah, you know, yeah, we had all these women and they put them together and I could see that's normal, but they're like, oh, they just kind of put them all together, gave them a cheesy line, like, maybe Marvel could have done a better job to make it less so, but I really think they took the conflict that is experienced in a lot of these communities and put it in a position where people can more than just understand it and judge it, not where they can do more so, but they can actually understand and judge it than making like a, oh, they're just trying to check the box on the diversity.
Right,
like,
exactly.
No, dude, like, they're trying to show you, like, this is an actual problem that people experience, and, like, you know, like, look at what they're doing, they're showing you the before and the after, and also, like, kind of the work in between, and it's kind of nice to see that level of detail in this program. And then all the while, you know, this is an aspect of the show that we get, like, hints of in the beginning, and then,
right.
You know, it goes more so in the end, but, like, we're still getting a lot of great Marvel fanfare. I think the action in this show is very well done. I think the CGI, while maybe not a ton of it, it's a lot better than other parts. They didn't use much of the green screen. You know, they went on site to Thailand, actually, to film a lot of this. I don't know if you noticed that in the credits. I was kind of sad that they went there, but, like, you know, I like to see that they're going in person, on location, and trying to represent other areas. And that's really good, too. I think that that overall, like, affected the production in a positive way. Especially after some of the Star Wars things we've been seeing, that are like, oh, yeah, you know, we can kind of see where the sets are a little limited. And it's a nice return to, you know, just filmmaking scale on a story that's, like, really, like, I would say kind of compact, kind of small. Like, it we don't get a lot of tie-ins with a lot of the other Marvel people, you know, until, you know, the very end. But even then, still, like, small in... It has its own niche. It has its own place. And I also got to discover more about Kamala Khan's power, which I didn't know.
Let's talk about that, because that was actually a big point of contention in a lot of detractors, a lot of people who they want to find some fault with this show because they're assholes, and they feel like they have to complain about it. The big point of contention is that what we see in the show, those are not Kamala Khan's comic book powers. They completely changed how her powers work. That's related to the bangle. The bangle doesn't give her the powers. It just kind of unlocks her powers. It's what are they called? The Noor, which is like hard light. And it's essentially she has Green Lantern powers. Whereas in the comics, and it's funny because they do pay kind of like lip service to it in the show, when she toward the end of the final episode, she uses the term Embiggen, which is that's her power in the comics, is she can stretch her limbs, she can grow her limbs, she's like she can like throw a punch and make her fist huge and stretch her arms and stuff and.
She's you know, a regular old Mr. Fantastic.
Basically, she's got that. She's got, you know, she can make herself bigger. I think she has the healing factor and stuff. So there's a lot of stuff. She has a lot of powers, which I think they kind of wanted to curb her abilities so she wasn't just this, you know, Swiss Army knife of a character that she has, like, any ability that the writers decide she needs. And also, I think with them trying to be... They're trying to come out with a Fantastic Four in the near future. They didn't want to have two characters with stretchy powers.
Yeah.
And this also gives it a much more unique visual flourish of seeing the, like, you know, crystal purple light coming from her.
Yeah.
I don't mind it. I thought it was fine.
Well, the thing is, you know, maybe this is where my, again, my comic book knowledge gets a little limited once we get past a certain point in a lot of these projects that they want to bring in some of these, I would say, relatively newer characters, is that I'm not as familiar with her. So, like, in the sense that I kind of like the way they introduced her, you know, like, and I'm okay with the change. I mean, I didn't have any preconceived ideas about it necessarily before.
It doesn't change anything about her character.
Yeah, I honestly feel like it, you know, she says it in the show that, like, it adds a little touch of personal flair. And I kind of like that, like, she gets it from this artifact that she has. And, like, you know, the thing is the MCU has already been talking about artifacts in a sense that, like, have like some Shang-Chi. Meaning, like Shang-Chi. Like, that is a very big thing that we need closure to. Like, what is this beacon? Where is it going to? And these 10 rings, like, this sounds fucking cool. You know, like, and I feel like, you know, we're moving this area, like, Kevin Feige and the team at the Marvel Pepe Silvio Center, they're putting all these things together and they're making these changes, because that's how things are adapted, you know? It's, I guess, how much spoilers do you want to go into earlier on? Because there is one very notable...
We're in full spoiler mode.
So the one very notable thing that I know... they changed is that Kamala Khan in the comics is an Inhuman.
Yes.
And in this universe that we're in right now, assuming that she's in the regular MCU Tailwind, I'm pretty sure she is.
I think she, well, we'll talk about that because, yes, yeah. with that post-credit stinger, she definitely is.
So the thing is that the Inhumans are not in our universe. They are in another universe. So they adapted to Kamala Khan and said that she's a mutant. And
yes, so that's a lot of people are like, oh, how dare they?
I could give less of a shit. I'm happy that they wanted to make her a mutant and not an Inhuman.
When Bruno said it's a mutation, and I went, and I'm like, they are getting some mileage out of this song.
Like, but that's okay, you know. Like, they have a grand plan to do their things, and like, that's fine. Like. These are the kinds of artistic liberties that should always be expected when it comes from adapting material, because it's in the very nature of the word adapt, you know? Like,
yeah.
And it's not that they're not, like, keeping true to the things. I think all the important things, they are keeping true to. Like, I don't know about you, but, like, this Green Lantern ability, and, like, I just feel like the idea of having two Mr. Fantastics is a dumb idea. Like, in general. Like,
yeah.
If anything, this is an improvement upon the character stuff and everything else in general.
For sure.
So, it made it easier, I think, as an audience. I wouldn't call myself, like, a regular Marvel fan, like a vanilla one. I would just say, like, as a fan of comic book ideas, and as a fan of cinema, and as a fan of both of these things put together... I think that they made a smart decision to relate their character to things that we've seen before across cinema and kind of have an idea about in knowledge, and they're trying to meet the best of the both worlds, and I think they achieved that.
Yeah, and of course, it sets up a really great stinger at the end with which kind of ties into the impact of the greater MCU, and that's that. At the very end, post-credits, Kamala is in her room, and she's just hanging out, I think, if I remember correctly, and her bangle starts acting up, and suddenly, boom, she disappears and is replaced with Brie Larson as Carol Danvers.
There was a lot of confusion about this, but they kind of, I don't want to say fixed themselves, but they did make a clarification as to what exactly happened.
Did they? What did they say?
So I think there was some contention that thought that she turned into Carol Danvers, and this is not the case. That what had happened was that they switched places.
Okay.
In the same universe.
Nice.
And so I'm not sure what you were about to say there.
I didn't mean
to cut you off.
That's interesting. And I'm interested to see where they go with this, because they've already said. Anson Mount is going to be reprising Black Bolt in the Marvels.
Oh, is he?
Yeah. So, and apparently, I forget the actress who played Medusa. She's going to be in it as well.
Here's the thing about Anson Mount and about the Inhumans and about what we've seen already is that, like...
Here's the thing about Anson Mount. Go watch Hell on Wheels. That's my recommendation, because that show is so good.
He's also Captain Christopher Pike in the Star Trek series.
That is
right
true.
Right now, on Discovery. Now, all right, so here's my issue is that, like, I like him, and I like him as Black Bolt, and I like him as Black Bolt in Multiverse of Madness, but in all reality, I never watched Inhumans. I didn't know shit about the Inhumans. And I look at Black Bolt's character, what sucks is, like, he can't fucking talk. And I'm like, damn it, do I want Anson Mount, one, in his cool-ass CG Black Bolt costume that I really liked, and two, like, I wish this SOB could talk. He's just a fucking block just, there.
Sorry, if there's thunder going on outside, there's a storm outside, so if you're picking that up at all...
You're fine.
Okay, cool.
But, I didn't know he was going to be in that. So that'll be exciting. Like, they saw the Inhumans, and they're taking the aspects. Like, they're doing all these things. They brought back Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield. They brought back Charles Xavier. Like... They're mixing these things. They're doing weird shit and experimenting. I would love to see them bring back what's his name. Give me 2 seconds. Like, what if they brought back like Miles Teller? Like, that would be weird. Oh, no. But like, what if they wrote it in a way that it's like it's clever? It's like, and they gave justice to like the shittiest version of the Fantastic Four. But what's the guy who played him in the original? I'm trying to remember the actor's name.
Oh God.
Owen Grufford.
Yeah.
Or Grufford. Yeah, like, what if they brought him back? You know,
what
like,
if they brought back...
Or Chris Evans as Human Torch. And he said he would do it. Like, that would be cool. Like, or Julian McMahon as Dr. Doom. Like, that'd be weird.
You never know, right?
Yeah, you know?
I still like the idea that someone put forward of, what's his name? Cillian Murphy as Dr. Doom? Victor Von Doom?
Is that a rumor? Or is that like a fan casting?
I think it's a fan casting, but
I don't know really if I'm like ready that. For him in the MCU yet. I don't know if I am at all.
Here's the thing: they're gonna cast him as a villain.
He was in the Dark Knight trilogy. I mean, granted, so was Christian Bale in all three. But like, I feel like I'm sick and tired of seeing him in these roles where like he's not a nice guy. And it's like,
don't watch Peaky Blinders then.
No, I don't watch Peaky Blinders. And it's like, I would like, I mean, I guess he has that face and he has that look, but like, I need to see him in other roles, man. I really do.
28 Days Later.
No.
I need
a different context. Maybe Oppenheimer. We're going to see something.
Listen, I don't know if Oppenheimer was a good guy or a bad guy.
Yeah, like, it'll just be an interesting role.
He definitely built something that killed a lot of people, so...
Right.
Anyway, going back to Ms. Marvel, I'm interested because, obviously, Kamala Khan is going to be one of the more important characters moving forward in the MCU. This was a really interesting way to kind of, like, usher in a new era into the MCU, almost... Because a lot of people have said it reminds them a lot, in many ways, of Homecoming, Spider-Man mm-hmm. Homecoming. And it's a high school story, and there's high school kids, and it's a superhero who's, you know, figuring out how to superhero and stuff like that. But I think I disagree on a few things, mainly because Spider-Man still was functioning on that idea of a secret identity, and you know... the responsibility of being a hero and of not taking on challenges that are too big for you and, you know, stuff like that. Whereas this one, I love that, like, when she does come to her family and say, like, yeah, like, or when her mother sees that she's got the powers, right? It's not like these cliche scenes of, like, oh, I'm horrified that you have these powers and it's dangerous and stuff. Her mom's like, sweet. Her mom is very supportive. Her family is very supportive. They think it's awesome that she's a superhero.
There's that expectation. There's the line that releases, like, because you have these powers, like, the question is asked, like, do you need to become, like, a superhero, and do you need to help people that, like, are in need of help, you know, like, that a superhero could, like, what they could offer them, like, do you need to take on that role? And, like, you know, they discuss the logic that, like, oh, well, you taught me to, like, help people in need or whatever the hell, like, and if I can offer it, like, I can do it. And, like, well, you don't really hear that as often sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, like, or, like, you know, talk that idea of, like, that level of selflessness, even though, like, wishing for powers in and of itself is kind of, like, selfish. Mm-hmm. But then it kind of, you know, obviously the stories are stories, and so, you know, everybody's selfish until they need to be. Look at Iron Man, right?
Right.
And it brings an interesting point, especially to, like, a high school student. You know, we see with Spider-Man. I was gonna say originally, like, oh, like, we see a different side of Spider-Man's high school experience than we do of Kamala Khan's or Peter Parker's. Sure. But at the same time, no, they do have a lot of similarities. Like, Kamala Khan went and experienced, like, a high school party when, you know, in Homecoming, we got to see Peter go to a high school party, even though it was, like, very brief, different kind of interactions. But they're still nice mirror experiences of each other. But, like, I want to say, when you're comparing adolescents, like, you know, men and women, and also very white men and brown women, very different cultural experiences. Like,
yeah, you're right. Yeah,
like,
yeah,
we got to see Peter's, like, he had all the freedom in the world, it seemed, as a high school kid, but you saw all the things that Kamala Khan struggled with as a young woman, like, trying to kind of go out and hang with her friends or do things and see kind of that relationship she had with her parents, where, like, oh, Aunt May worked all the time and shit like that. Like, you know, Peter was a free boy. He went out and did whatever. So it's kind of nice seeing the other side of that coin. And it adds those extra layers of depth where, like, you know, we wouldn't necessarily think about it or kind of go back and reference them, say, like, oh, it's too different or it's too similar. It's like, it's exactly what it needed to be. Which is why I also think, like, it's just so refreshing. You know,
yeah, for the most part, I thought there's some stuff where, like, I think I had texted you of, like, it has a very similar structure to Moon Knight in that we follow them with all their, you know, different shenanigans and adventures, and then episode 5 is a big flashback episode and the very introspective let me discover how my powers really work episode for a big finale where they suit up in the costume and do the thing they're supposed to do. So, yeah, it's a little, you know, it's formulaic. Everything's formulaic. There's very few things that are not formulaic to some extent. But
go ahead.
I was going to say, it handles it really well.
Do you want to, like, I do want to touch on some of, like, the editing choices that they that they made in this, because there's one thing that I think you and I have talked about in the past that, you know, we do live in a modern time now, and so modern stories require modern solutions. And what better way to do exposition than to show, like, on text, like, things on screen? Because how people communicate today. You know, like, not everybody's doing phone calls and, you know, actually doing things. Now we express ideas and words and thoughts as emojis or, like, you know, and with just banter. And so that has to be represented in a way. And instead of just it being on screen and stuff, it's kind of shown in some really creative ways. And mostly in the very first episode, you get this, it's kind of what I was talking about, like, that kind of flair to it that represents, oh, like, the tech generation, you know, like, you have the text and stuff lined up in the graffiti of the walls or, like, in the neon lights of the windows. And by the way, like, that Circle Q set and everything, it was very well lit. Like, it has, I said litten? That's not a word. It's just very well lit. And, you know, obviously people love, like, neon aesthetics and, like, you know, dark city corners and just things like that, but they made it work really well. It was super creative. Now, the show wasn't able to kind of keep up with that, because when they changed kind of areas or, like, locations, and they went, you know, to the eastern part of the world, like, then we kind of lost a lot of that sense, and we stopped using phones to talk, and we stopped seeing all that, you know, nice editing flair. And
I think that was important, though, because if that was there as much as it was in the New Jersey setting,
mm-hmm.
I think we would have lost out on seeing a lot of Pakistan, seeing the city, seeing the culture of the city and the people there. And if there was, like, you know, artistic flourishes around everything and
very stuff like composition that. Notebook drawing type business, you know, like, 'cause
that stuff's meant to kind of reflect Kamala as a person, you know, she draws
in the environment
lot,
that she's in and everything like that. Like, right, I think I agree.
So it almost makes sense that you would want scenes taking place outside of her normal environment to break the mold on, you know, what the show stylistically does, because then, you know, okay, this is a completely different area. It's handled differently. It's shot differently. It's edited differently.
What I like about it, and I think a lot of people liked about it from what I've read, is that it was a nice way of kind of bringing a new type of exposition to the story, or like kind mm-hmm. of as a transitional effect, and kind of show us like what else we can do with some of these in-between moments. And it's kind of sad that it was lost, even though it was necessary to kind of keep it, you know, keep all the scenes kind of cohesive. So I think in a sense, like, as long as they don't forget that they had the opportunity to use this flair in the past, and they put, you know, Kamala in these situations where they can still explore those creative ways and uses of editing, I think, you know, that's something that fans would appreciate from Marvel, is that, you know, there was not that everything needs to be depressing and everything like that, but, like, you know, if we find that things work and that they're stylized in a way that matches our protagonist, then they should keep, you know, they should kind of hold that truth together, for her
every
future.
Every one of these shows or movies should be stylistic to the particular character to give them more of a sense of identity. Because I think a big criticism that Marvel got in its, like, Phase 2, early Phase 3 movies was that people called it the wet cement mm-hmm. look. Is that everything was kind of devoid of real punch and color, and everything was just kind of shot as plainly as possible.
I think that's why people, like, reacted so well to Guardians at the time, because it was, like, the only one that, like, really popped amongst the rest of, like, the Phase 2 lineup.
Yeah, I think that had a lot to do with it.
You know, it's funny, because I feel like we're experiencing the opposite now. Now that we're, like, coming, I don't want to say Phase 4 isn't necessarily coming to a close, but there's only a couple projects left.
I think, it's not far off.
And the thing is, I feel like because they veered too far off into too many different directions, which is kind of funny, because a lot of the context is that, like, oh, there have been new universes created, all these different avenues. Like,
right.
I think everything got a lot of out of hand, and whether that was a point or not, I think people are hoping for a little more direction, which there's been hints dropped at that, like, the direction will show up soon. Like, we've already seen some bits, but, like, you know, I think they're going to start putting the pieces back together, because, you know, finishing the Marvels, I still feel like, and also Thor, like, I still feel like I am not entirely sure where we're going with all this.
Right.
And
so,
I don't know how much more uncertainty I can take, because there's a lot of questions that need to be answered. And like I said, I'm already, not that I've had it with Marvel, but, like, I'm already realized that I haven't enjoyed a lot of these projects as much as, like, I could have. Like, if we're going to rank the television series as they've come out, So I still think, for me, Loki's probably number one. But I would put Ms. Marvel and Moon Knight, like, kind of neck and neck with each other.
Yeah.
Like, in terms of... And fucking Falcon Winter Soldier, I think dead last. You know, I think Hawkeye is, like, all right. And I think WandaVision is all right in comparative. But even then, like, they're still so far apart from each other, all these series, that it's really hard for me to think, like, these were even happening in the same time, you know?
Yeah, I think, well, like, going forward, obviously we have the Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special. We've got the Halloween special, which is going to be, I guess, Werewolf by Night.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have She-Hulk. And so, like, there's still, like, a lot of, like, things where it's, like, I think it's still, we're still going to be... Well, no, I don't want to say that, you know, those shows... are going to, like, just kind of be more of the same stuff where it's unfocused and, you know, it won't be leading to, like, what is the big event gonna be? Because I'm, like, you know, but I don't think they're gonna have as much of, like, a lasting impact as people are gonna want. I think the two projects that are really going to show what the future of, like, the MCU is, are Wakanda Forever,
mm-hmm.
and Quantumania, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania.
Yeah.
Which I just realized, Ant-Man and the Wasp is, Quantumania is scheduled for a February 17th, 23 release. So that's a very early one, and I think that, I didn't realize it was coming so soon, so I think, obviously, there we're getting Kang, the Conqueror,
yeah.
and, I think that will be once we get that, it will be very crystal clear what, like, the where this whole thing has been leading.
The last fucking 3 years of shit. Oh my god, I just feel like it's lasted so long that I'm ready to move on from it.
And then we're getting, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy in May. We're getting the July, so very shortly after. We're getting the Marvels, so we're gonna get two cosmic stories back to back.
Talk about brain hemorrhages again.
It's a lot. And then on the TV front, there's still Secret Invasion, Ironheart.
Oh my god.
Apparently Ironheart Riri Williams is being introduced in Wakanda Forever. So there's a lot. Even on top of that, I understand that as of right now, with all the San Diego Comic-Con stuff going on,
Hall H even a thing anymore?
Yeah.
Is that something that people like? I don't feel like it's as big, or because of the pandemic, it's really like, I don't know that I've been seeing Comic-Con news as much as, like, we used to, and it's kind of sad. But at the same time, like, I don't know. I feel like I kind of need a break. For a bit, you know, I feel like because I'm not, it's not as exciting as it used to be before we knew what the buildup was, but right now, because it's like we don't know the end game, quote unquote.
well, we might hard. Now, we might now because,
yeah, like, we kind of know.
Apparently,
there's just too much speculation.
They've trademarked two new Avengers movies.
Oh, god,
they've trademarked Secret Wars. And Kang Dynasty.
They did not trademark Secret Wars. I do not want Secret Wars. I cannot express how much I do not want Secret Wars to happen.
Well,
the time has passed for Secret Wars, I think.
I don't know. I feel like it might be a better time than ever with
they
so
better
many
adapt
heroes.
It. They better fucking adapt the shit out of Secret Wars, because it is so hard to make that into actuality. I don't think...
Well, the Russos have said that that's the only movie they would come back for.
That's their dream project. I don't even know if I want them to come back. I don't even know that I want them. I'm glad they ended on a high note. Let's leave it at that. I don't need to bite the hand that feeds us.
The thing is, they need to build up to something big. Otherwise, all this stuff is basically just, why not just make separate movies? Why does everything have to be connected? It's only connected if you're building up to something. So I'm hoping...
This is true.
I'm hoping that Kevin Feige does that thing he does really well, where he takes all these loose, dangling threads and he brings them all together and makes it seem like everything that's been disconnected has been building up to something. So... we feel like we didn't waste our time, which I trust him to do. I'm not saying he's already laid the groundwork, but I am saying that he's really good about going back and being like, yeah, that thing, we can use that, and we can use this, and look, oh, it works together. It just works.
Listen, I agree. My final thought is that at the moment I feel exhausted.
Yeah.
I'm happy, like, Ms. Marvel, great. Thankfully it was, because Thor was a little disappointing.
Fatigue is setting in a bit.
You know, and I gotta say, like, they need to start correlating these things. They do. or else, I mean, not saying they're not gonna lose a customer, you know, because I need to be a part of the scene no matter what. But at the same time, like, I could go for some more enjoyment. But
for sure.
That's my final thoughts on the matter.
Mine as well.
Thank you.
You're
lovely
welcome.
Listeners.
Oh.
And thank you, Zach, always joining me for these lovely conversations. And
you kidding? I don't miss out on my therapy sessions ever.
As always, you can find us on our website, www.scriptorscreen.com or anchor.fm/scriptorscreen, and on our social medias at scriptorscreen, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. I have been one of your co-hosts, Christopher Kitchen. That is Zach Strachman. You have a wonderful rest of your day.
Bye.